On today's edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, Josh and I continue to break down the best and worst Nets draft picks since the year 2000. All that and more coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So fellas that won't be joining him are some of our worst draft picks. Marcus, kick us off with, I guess, what, fourth or fifth worst draft pick, depending on how you did.
Okay, I'm going to come out with one of the few lottery picks that the Nets had. I'm going to go with Terrence Williams from the 2009 draft. He was the 11th pick that year, and I don't know. Terrence Williams isn't like a terrible player or anything like that. He was like kind of fine. He was drafted 11th, like I said, but like just the fact that 2009 draft was so stacked, especially like in that top 10, you had Blake Griffin going first, you had James Harden going third, Steph Curry seventh, DeMar DeRozan ninth. All those guys made all NBA teams. And like, I know the Nets weren't taking those guys because they were drafted ahead of Terrence Williams, but it just makes it like so much more disappointing. And then guys drafted right after him would be like Jrue Holiday, Jeff Teague, like solid, consistent guys who have made an all-star team. Like, it's just like kind of like a missed opportunity to have gotten a guy who you could like later put with Brook Lopez, who was drafted the year before, and try to start something more organic in the early half of the 2010s. Like a real missed opportunity. One of, like I said, just five lottery picks that the Nets have had in the last 20 years. So not like the worst pick of all time. He only played a year and a half with the Nets. And like I said, didn't do a ton. But yeah, just like given the spot, given how few opportunities the Nets have had to draft someone really good, that was definitely a miss.
Yes, he was on my list. Also, I had him slightly higher on the, or slightly worse on, I guess, on the list than you did. He was like a, he was a guy that came in and he definitely had a ton of talent, you know. But he was a guy that came in and had played all 4 years at Louisville. And I think he was a guy that if you did this, did like, if he was in the draft now, he would go so much lower. There was no chance he'd be in the lottery because he was an interesting player in that he was a really good ball handler and passer for his size. And a pretty athletic defender, if not the, always the most disciplined, but he really had no shot at all. And he was really not like the best finisher, or the finisher that you think he would be based on his athleticism. And when he came into the NBA, especially playing 4 years, he didn't necessarily have a ton of upside. And he was just on these Nets team that gave him no chance to win because they were so unstructured. It was like on the 1072 team and just teams that couldn't do anything with the ball. So he was handling it a lot, but he's had no ability to either hit a three or get to the basket and score. And had some character concerns also. And then he only lasted basically a year and a half before he was sent on a three-team trade to Houston, which was basically a lot of picks, swapped either way. And then I think Sasha Vujacic came back to the Nets because it was a three-team trade with the Lakers. But yeah, I was excited for him at the time. He was a good athlete. He was someone that was really well-known in college. But just wasn't someone who was a good fit for the NBA game at that point. And I think if he was in the draft now, he's probably someone that wouldn't even be a first-round pick, just a wing that couldn't really shoot or score, and those guys are tough to make work.
Yeah, that's a good point about, like, if it was happening now, because there weren't really, like, a ton of one-and-dones back then. This was, like, right before that. So, like, just looking at the lottery, it was just Tyreek Evans who would win Rookie of the Year, and DeRozan were the only two one-and-done guys in the lottery from that draft. So definitely, like, kind of he came, like, at the right time for him to be drafted higher and paid more. And it just, yeah, it never worked out in the NBA, especially not with the Nets in such a short time.
Yeah, my like, the thing also I remembered about him was that, like, he would always... There's a story about him on the Louisville campus that he just always wears a SpongeBob backpack because he loves SpongeBob. So that was one of my Terrence Williams memories. But he was on some good Louisville teams. They, I don't think they ever won the championship with him there. But yeah, just not a good fit for the NBA and someone that was kind of, I'd say, someone that really kind of showed how poor that Nets brass was before getting things kind of in place over recent years.
That SpongeBob backpack thing seems like a red flag in hindsight. Like, if I had heard that at the time, I would have said, I don't know if I could tie my fate to this guy as a GM.
I don't know. If he was around some good vets, then maybe. But he was on his rookie season was a 12-70 team.
Yeah, I'm on his Wikipedia right now. Also, some more recent news on him. On October 6, 2015, Williams signed with the upcoming AmeriLeague to play on the following season. However, the league folded after it was discovered the founder was a con artist. So that's what he's been up to.
I think I've heard of that. Very disappointing. Very disappointing.
Yeah, even after the NBA, he can't catch a break.
I know.
It's a shame.
Okay, so moving on from T-Will. I think this is probably the longest that anyone has spent on him in a long time on a basketball podcast, except if it's Locked On Louisville Cardinals. I'm sure those guys are doing a great job. But my pick is Marcus Williams, another Williams, your namesake Marcus, the guy you were named after.
Yeah.
Marcus Williams was a he was similar to, everyone thought he could be a Jason Kidd type, where he was a guy that on town alone would have gotten drafted a lot higher at that time. He was a very smooth point guard, excellent passer and floor general, had some problems in school in terms of just got arrested for a few things. I think stealing laptops was one of them. But he was on a prolific UConn team. It was Marcus Williams, Josh Boone, Rudy Gay, Hilton Armstrong. So four guys picked in the first round. And again, this was kind of before Kentucky was throwing like four or five guys, and Duke was doing that in the first round. So they were loaded. He came into the league and really, you know, I think it wasn't a great situation for him. You know, people would say, okay, he's going to kind of be able to learn from Jason Kidd, but he had some injury problems also. And then he was another guy that was just really unathletic and couldn't get his own shot, wasn't a particularly great three-point shooter, struggled on defense. His one skill was really just being a good passer, but he wasn't the type of guy that could really do anything because wasn't able to open his game up in other ways. He wasn't the athlete that Jason Kidd was. And obviously his floor vision was good, but it wasn't supernatural like Kidd's was also. So the Nets picked him. Two picks after was a little point guard by the name of Kyle Lowry from Villanova, another Big East guy. What a world if the Nets had picked Williams over Lowry. So even though it was kind of a lower draft spot at 22, Marcus Williams had so much hype coming in, and he was just such a bust considering that I can't give him the nod here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny you actually mentioned him because I started right before we started this podcast. I started watching an old Nets Suns game that they just put up on YouTube. It was like a double OT game from 2006. I watched the first quarter so far, and Marcus Williams had just checked in like a little bit before we started this podcast. Had a couple nice passes, like you mentioned, but then there was a sequence where the defense was just so far off him, and he like tried to force a pass that was like just thrown right to Phoenix. So I kind of see what you're talking about. Obviously, I wasn't watching the Nets nearly as closely in 2006, but just from that like couple minute sequence of like a random game from his rookie year, it makes sense what you were saying. Like, he seems like he wanted to try to learn from Jason Kidd, but like you said, it's kind of, Kidd's kind of like a one of one type, especially passing wise. So a tough mantle to carry in that regard.
Yeah, and he played 200 games career in the NBA, kind of flamed out quickly, and posted for his career 0 win shares.
Mm.
And yeah, basically 47% true shooting. His just inability to score really held him back at the next level. He was like, just to give somewhat more of a modern comparison, he was like a Kendall Marshall type. Like, great passer, great floor vision, can't do anything else.
I liked Kendall Marshall.
I liked him as a UNC guy.
Yeah, same. Marcus Williams. Him? What'd you say?
Were you considering him?
No. I just remember liking his look more than anything else.
He has a solid look.
Anyway. Marcus Williams, not a ton to say on him. He had a very brief career in the NBA. Back-to-back Williamses from us, Josh. That's a shame for the last name. There were actually a few Williamses with the Nets, right? Didn't they also have Sean and Sheldon?
They had Sheldon, the landlord Williams, kind of was the, it's a mascot of the team when they were in the he was just terrible. And then they had both Sean Williamses.
Right.
They had
the Shawnee also.
They had Shawnee, the three-point shooting Williams, that kind of bounced around and had a good season with the Knicks, and he was on the Pacers a bit. And then they also had Sean Williams, who played for Boston College, who everyone called the Freak, because he was a great athlete. So they had both Williams.
The original, the Freak. Pre-Giannis.
I know.
The American Freak.
Mad that Giannis took that.
Yeah. Giannis probably had to, you know, like when a player, like a veteran joins a team and has to like pay a young guy to get the jersey number. I wonder if Giannis had to do that for the nickname from Sean Williams.
I would hope so. That's just good editing. Sean Williams was really, really exciting to watch.
Which one?
Regular.
The Freak?
Not Shawnee. Yeah, Freak.
Okay.
He was an insane shot. I'm looking at his stats now. He averaged, his rookie season, he averaged a block and a half in 18 minutes a game.
Jesus.
he was insane. He was one of the most athletic big men I've ever seen in my life.
That's crazy. Yeah, that's, I mean, per 36, that would be 3.
I know.
Little quick math for you there, Josh.
Yeah, but he would also basically foul out in 36 minutes. So he was like a Mitchell Robinson. But
that's what I was just gonna say. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, he was averaging. Yeah, that same season he averaged 2.5 fouls per like in like 17 and a half minutes. So.
This game.
Should I hit you with another good pick here, Josh? What are we thinking?
Yeah, let's see it.
Okay. This one I texted you for clarification before doing my research. This guy was part of a draft day trade for the Nets in 2001. He was the 13th pick originally by Houston, but traded for Eddie Griffin, the 7th pick that the Nets made. He was traded alongside Jason Collins and Brandon Armstrong. Richard Jefferson, current Nets broadcaster, former Nets player, super consistent over 7 seasons with the Nets, 17.5 points. 5.5 rebounds, 3 assists per game. He was on the all-rookie team. And just since 2000 by Nets draft picks, if we're counting him as a Nets draft pick, second to Brooke in points and rebounds, and also the most assists by a Nets draft pick since 2000. So definitely made a huge impact. And as the 13th pick, a huge steal. Plus the fact that it was not Eddie Griffin who was traded to Houston. And RJ also. Just we've mentioned win shares kind of a lot on this podcast, but more win shares than Brook Lopez, despite playing one fewer season with the Nets.
Yeah, no, I mean, RJ was, he kind of ushered in that iconic Nets era, and iconic to me, maybe what's not iconic to people out there. But yeah, I mean, he was just such a great player to watch in his earlier years, dynamic score, so fast. Such a good, such an explosive athlete, and at 6'8", was able to really be a go-to scorer and get wherever he wanted. And then after his rookie season, was able to slowly but surely develop a three-point shot, and then made him even more dynamic of a scorer. Was a one-time All-Star for the Nets. Devastating when we do our worst trades, or actually didn't make the All-Star team for the Nets. It's surprising, never made an All-Star. When we make the list of worst trades, I'm sure. Him for Ejion Leon will be on that list.
Mm. The chairman.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. RJ, like, super underrated, though, in my opinion.
So good. He was on my list as well. And he was, like, if he came around now, if he was in his prime now, not, like, kind of the shell of himself that we saw with the Cavs and Dallas, he would be a really, really good, like, tough to guard stretch four. Like, he would be such a dynamic scorer.
Yeah, and even, like, with that Cavs team that won the title, like, obviously he was way past his prime, especially athletically, but, I mean, they were, like, better with him on the floor than Kevin Love on the floor for, like, specifically in that matchup against the Warriors. Like, when they needed to go small, he was, like, a really key piece of their ability to do that, and, like, part of the reason why they turned it around in 2016 and won the title, just because he could space the floor, he could guard on the perimeter a lot better than Kevin Love, even at that age. So, yeah, like, if he had come around, like, 10 years, 11, 15 years later, like, yeah, he would have been a real monster. Similar to a guy like Sean Marion. I feel like there were a lot of those types of, like, guys who back then were probably closer to threes, but if they came around now, would be fours. Marion was at least in a situation in Phoenix that was, like, closer to what we see currently in the NBA in terms of, like, spacing and shooting and moving around and things like that. But Yeah, it would have been nice to see RJ in something like that in his prime.
Yeah, I mean, especially, like, just think about, like, especially they had probably the center that's, like, the most plotting at the time in Jason Collins. Mm-hmm. So between RJ, Collins, and Kmart, and then you have J-Kidd at point guard, who's definitely not known for his shooting. There was really not a lot of space for him to drive, but he made it work. You know, he was a prolific foul drawer and had some incredible moments for the Nets and definitely was one of the signature guys on those early to mid 2000s teams.
Yeah. I mean, it was him, Kmart, Kidd, and then our guy, Kerry Kittles as well, holding the torch. Definitely an iconic era for the Nets.
Yes. Yes. He was on my list as well. Let me just see. Okay. Let me give you a best that, and we could talk about this man quickly. I think not many people know this, that he was drafted by the Nets and played a season for them. And he's probably more of an honorable mention type, but I do want to get him in this podcast. Ryan Anderson, 21st pick in 2008. He played for Cal Berkeley, was actually a really good player there. I think Pac-10 player of the year, dynamic scorer. And at that time, he was just a scoring and rebounding machine, not just someone who was a three-point shooter. He actually came in not being much of a three-point shooter. Was, I think, best known amongst Nets fans for being best friends with Brook Lopez, but came in, was a good three-point shooter for the Nets his first year. That really kind of developed into his bread and butter. Very solid scorer and rebounder. So his career blossomed elsewhere with Orlando and Pelicans, Houston, but was a Nets draft pick and played one season for them. So I just want to throw him out there.
Yeah, definitely. And same draft year as Brooke, like you mentioned, 2008. Ryan Anderson, a little bit ahead of his time as well, but kind of like Sean Marion, found a situation in Orlando where he was able to blossom and flourish. Like, yeah, it's interesting to think, like, if the Nets had, like, kept Ryan Anderson and like, put him next to Brooke Lopez, and then, like, if they had nailed the Terrence Williams pick, like, they could have had, like, a Jrue Holiday thrown in with Ryan Anderson, Brook Lopez, like stretching the floor, two big guys. That could have been interesting in the early half of the 2010s.
Yep. Alas, it wasn't. Another trade that's probably not talked about as poor as it was. You give up Vince Carter, who was still for the Nets at the time. He dropped off once he went to Orlando, but for the Nets, he was still a very good player. And Ryan Anderson to get back Courtney Lee, who sucked with the Nets and only became a college player upon leaving the team. And he was also mad to be there because he left the team that was really good in Orlando too, the Nets, who were terrible.
Yeah, I wonder if Courtney Lee makes that layup in the finals against the Lakers if they don't trade him. Who knows? Honestly, yeah, Ryan Anderson, low-key though, like, very good career and like a very long prime. Like, he was in double figures for 7 straight years in the middle of his career. Definitely like a good contributor on great teams, and was able to space the floor. And then I was going to bring up also, like, partially changed the game and like pushed things further out in Houston, where he was like one of the first guys alongside Eric Gordon to spot up like 4 or 5 feet beyond the arc on the wings. And that kind of opened things up even more for James Harden on those pick and roll drives. And like, that had never really been done before. Like, guys saying, instead of just getting like as close to the line as possible, like, why not step back? If you can hit that shot from further out, it's just stretching the defense even more, giving them a couple more feet to have to run to on a closeout, making them a little bit more extended, and giving Harden a little bit more space on drive. So definitely like a trailblazer and a guy who probably won't be remembered as that, because there had been other stretch bigs before, and James Harden is obviously the guy who makes everything run in Houston. But without guys like Anderson and Eric Gordon, like, it wouldn't have reached that insane peak that it kind of did offensively.
Yeah, no, for sure. That's an excellent point. He was a really fun player to watch, and it's just a shame that he fell out of favor pretty quickly in the league. I think it's might have just been because he had such a big contract before, but like, I thought he could still help a team these last couple of years.
Yeah, I think it's that, like, once, especially like the Rockets themselves kind of became more of an isolation team, like trying to get switches and then just like targeting that one player, he became like a pretty easy guy like if you're playing the Warriors, which is kind of all that the Rockets were trying to do, like just run a pick and roll with Steph at him. And it, once you eventually get the switch, Steph can just kind of torch him. Yeah. Whereas before, like you could hide him on like a Harrison Barnes type. But then, yeah, once the league went a little bit more like isolation heavy these last 1 or 2 years, he was not quite as valuable defensively. He was like way worse. And so it couldn't quite make up for what he brings you positively on the offensive end.
Even 17-18 season, I mean, 39% from three on five attempts per game.
Yeah.
Shabby. That's all I'm going to say.
Lights out shooter.
Yeah. Wait, also, can I, there's another stat I found. Going back to Sean Williams, he averaged five blocks a game his junior year at BC.
Oh, my God.
He was a monster.
That's like the kind of number where I'm like, I don't even know how that's possible. Like, is that just like a Hassan Whiteside on the Heat thing where you're just like chasing block shots? Probably.
Oh. He only played 15 games that season.
Still.
But listen, numbers don't lie.
Yeah, that's 75 blocks in those 15 games. There's some more math for you, Josh.
Exactly. I'm looking at it. I don't want to make our listeners do the math. So I just told
them. No.
That's going to do it for today's episode of the Locked On Nets podcast. We will be back in your ears tomorrow with even more breaking down of previous Nets draft picks. In the meantime, if you want even more Locked On NBA content, just tell your smart device to play the latest episode of Rejecting the Screen. And until tomorrow, be well. Bye.